Welcome to Audio Theater, hosted by the Geochronos Radio Network.
Good evening, this is your hostess, Allison. Welcome to Audio Theater, for December 13th, 2021. This evening, on Audio Theater, we present a 9-play from the old-time radio series, 5-Minute Mysteries. Tonight's show's titles will be, Wife Poisons Husband at Party, Daughter Murders Father, Diamond Smuggling, Man Dies in Cave, Man's Father Hit by Car, Mr. Daly's Fake Robbery, Mrs. Brown Poisons Husband, Principal Bludgeoned, and Richard Drowned. These shows' original air dates were, not known. Now, we present these last 9 episodes of 5-Minute Mysteries momentarily. Enjoy this evening's presentation.
Another 5-Minute Mystery. Anniversary party is going on at the Brown household around the corner. One of the guests, George Taylor, pauses while eating his dessert to say,
Best lemon chiffon pie I've ever tasted, Mary.
Oh, really?
I wish my wife could do as well.
Oh, thank you.
Say, it doesn't look as if Sam is appreciating it much, though.
Goodness, is my cooking that bad? Sam, your head's practically in your plate. I guess it's fallen asleep ever tonight, and I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Sam, sit up. This is dreadful. I'd better shake him. Sam!
Wait, can't he? He's dead.
How do you do? I'm Sergeant Barker, the Homicide Division.
Oh.
He's one of my boys, Mike Grady. Where's the body?
In the dining room at the table. We didn't move him.
Mm-hmm. I might as well be comfortable, everybody. This'll take just a little while.
Dead, all right. Peaceful, too.
Who's Mrs. Sam Brown?
I am.
And do you mind telling me what happened?
I guess not. I'm so shocked, I don't know where to begin or what to tell you.
Well, you might as well begin by telling me what you served for dinner.
Well, we had soup first.
Soup? What kind?
Mushroom, then roast chicken, green peas, mashed potatoes, dessert, and coffee. But I don't see how this could mean anything.
Yeah, just routine, Mrs. Brown. Did Mr. Brown eat everything?
Yes, he did. He seemed to fall asleep over his coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried to wake him, I found he'd had a heart attack.
Yeah. That'll be all for a few minutes, Mrs. Brown. We want to take a look around. Notice anything about this table, Mike?
No, Chief. I can't say as I do.
Yeah, neither do I. Let's look in this kitchen here. Yeah, orderly person, isn't she? Stacked dishes after each course.
Yes. And here's the silverware over here. Look, Chief. One of these soup spoons has turned black.
Black? Let me see it. The only spoon that's tarnished, too. Well, I was beginning to think it was a heart attack or a perfect murder, but this silver soup spoon is evidence enough. Mrs. Brown?
Yes, Sergeant Barker?
I'm sorry to interrupt your little party, Mrs. Brown, but I'm sure your guests won't mind.
I don't understand.
You will, Mrs. Brown, you will. You see, you're under arrest for the murder of your husband.
Do you know why Sergeant Barker accused Mrs. Brown of murder? In a moment, we'll hear the solution. But first, a word from our sponsor. Back to our story.
Sergeant Barker, how do you know it was homicide?
Well, Mrs. Brown took careful pains to wash the soup pans and soup dishes before she served the rest of the meal.
Yes, I can see that.
But she forgot one thing, to wash the silver soup spoons. What she didn't realize was that an hour later, by the end of dinner, the spoon her husband had used to eat his toadstool soup would give her away. She didn't know that toadstools make silver turn black. Mrs. Brown almost committed the perfect murder, but she forgot to wash one spoon.
Another 5-minute mystery. I say is calling, sir?
Jack Curtis of the Evening Record.
Oh, yes, Mr. Curtis. If you will follow me, sir, Mr. Fuller will see you.
Mr. Fuller?
I'm Leslie Fuller. It was my father who was killed.
According to reports, the case isn't progressing so well.
No, it isn't, Mr. Curtis. Seems to be a complete mystery as to who could have killed my father.
I wonder if it might be possible for me to talk with the other members of the household.
Oh, yes, of course. It's just my sister Barbara, Barton the butler, and myself.
Did you ring, sir?
Oh, yes, Barton. Mr. Curtis would like to talk to you and my sister. Do you go for her? She's in the room.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Fuller, were you at home the night your father was killed?
I'm a radio news commentator, Mr. Curtis, and at the time my father was killed, I was on the air.
Oh, don't believe I've ever heard you on the radio, Mr. Fuller.
It's quite possible if you haven't, Mr. Curtis. My commentaries are broadcast in short wave, unless you had a shortwave receiver.
Oh, yes, yeah, of course.
Did you want to see me, Leslie?
Oh, yes, Barbara. May I present Mr. Curtis of the Evening Record? He wants to ask you some questions.
How do you do, Mr. Curtis?
Oh, how do you do?
You remain also, Barton.
Yes, sir.
Where were you at the time Mr. Fuller was killed, Barton?
I was in the kitchen, sir. I was helping cook polish the silver. When I heard the shot, I ran into the drawing room and found Mr. Fuller slumped over in his chair.
Shot through the head, wasn't he, Barton?
Yes, sir.
And where were you at the time, Miss Fuller?
Oh, I was here in the library. I was lying on the sofa listening to Leslie on the radio when I heard the shot. I never miss
him. Radio? What radio?
Oh, that old portable over there on the desk.
Oh, I see. Where is the cook, Mr. Fuller?
She left this morning. She was terribly upset, and the police said it would be all right.
I see. Oh, that's a very beautiful picture of you there on the desk, Miss Fuller. Do you have another one like it?
Why... Yes, of course, but...
Oh, I don't want it for myself, Miss Fuller. I want it for my paper.
Just what are you driving at, Curtis?
Just that your sister's picture will appear in the paper tomorrow under the headline, Daughter Murders Father.
But that's fantastic. You have no reason in the world to believe that I murdered
him. No, I don't, do I? Well, you made one statement that convinced me immediately that you were lying.
What was the statement that led Curtis to believe that Barbara was lying? In a moment, we'll let you know, but first... Back to our mystery.
Yes, Miss Fuller, you made one statement that convinced me immediately that you were lying. Your alibi was that at the time the shot was fired, you were lying in here listening to your brother's commentary on the radio. That's impossible, Miss Fuller. Your brother broadcasts on short wave. Short wave is something different, Miss Fuller, and requires a special receiving set. You could hardly expect me to believe that you heard your brother on that old portable radio you have here. It just wouldn't work. Get your hat and coat, Miss Fuller. Where you're going, you'll have a long time to figure out the intricacies of short wave.
Another 5-minute mystery.
tell you, Janice, it's got to be Slick.
No, it won't work, Roger. It's too uncertain.
But there's nothing to go wrong. Now listen. Those custom boys are used to naive, stupid smuggling. We've got to be smart, that's all.
And you think your idea is?
Look, Janice, why isn't it? We get on the boat. We're strangers. We never speak to each other. No one on the boat can connect us in any way. Now, I get off first, and right away I have my trunk and bags examined. By the time I'm through, you're off and you're waiting. Then...
Yes, but that timing. How can I be sure there won't be a lot of people under letter G and only me at K?
For heaven's sake, Janice, you can stall somehow. We'll be near enough to each other to see how things are going.
Okay, okay.
Then I pick up my three bags and walk over toward you. I'm clumsy and I don't see where I'm going. I bump into you, and as I do, you drop my wallet. I pick it up.
With your hands full of bags, I suppose.
Well, maybe you pick it up. We don't have to rehearse a scene like that. If anyone thinks he sees you drop it, my initials and identification will prove it's mine, especially as I've just been through the customs. It'll look as if I had it in my hand.
Sounds good, Roger.
Good. It's perfect. Why, with the diamond market the way it is, we'll clean up in America, honey.
Roger, if this works, you're a genius.
Is that all you want to declare, Mr. Griswold?
That's all.
You're clear then, Mr. Griswold. Guess you're glad to be home.
I certainly am. More than you can guess.
Yeah, it must be pretty tough in Lisbon, even for Americans. Oh, can you manage that packing by yourself?
Oh, yes, thanks. I must be clumsy about this now. There's Janice, good girl. She's just arrived. Fine. Well, here we go. I beg your pardon.
Well, why don't you look where you're going? Oh, just a minute. I think you dropped this wallet.
What? Oh, yes, yes. I guess I did. Oh, thanks very much.
Wait a minute, sir. He didn't drop that, miss. You did.
Oh, no, you're mistaken. That isn't my wallet.
Well, indeed it isn't.
I saw you drop it, miss. Say, what's going on here?
Oh, nothing's going on. This gentleman ran into me and dropped his wallet, and I picked it up, and that's all.
How do you know it's his wallet?
Because his initials are on it.
Oh, they are they? What are your names?
Janice Kite.
I'm Roger Griswold, but I don't...
Well, Janice Kite and Roger Griswold, you're both under arrest for smuggling. How did the customs official discover their trick? In just a minute, we'll hear. First, a word from our sponsor. Back to our story.
Look here, you can't arrest me for smuggling.
Well, you remember I asked you, Miss Kite, how you knew it was his wallet that had dropped.
Yes.
You said you knew it was his because his initials were on it.
Well, aren't they?
Yes, his initials are there, all right, but on the inside. And when the wallet dropped to the floor, it didn't fall open, so you couldn't have seen them. Therefore, I knew you had previous knowledge of them. Yes, you two had a nice little package of 15 diamonds in that wallet. And now, how about a free ride to the station house? Another 5 minute mystery. Takes place in Green's Gap, a small town in the southern cavern district.
Green's Gap Hospital, Dr. Melville speaking.
Doctor, there's been an accident out at Echo Cavern.
Accident? What kind of accident?
Two men was exploring, and they got lost last night. One's unconscious. You better come quick before he's dead.
You know how to get out to Echo Cavern, Lem.
Yes, I've been town constable and ambulance driver. I reckon I know about all there is to know about this country.
Ever been in the cavern, Lem?
Once, Doc Melville, when I was a boy. Nearly got my hide hand off of my paw.
Echo Cavern's a mighty treacherous place.
You mean it's easy to get lost in?
Yeah, not only that, Doc. It's that cavern gas, carbon something.
Carbon dioxide?
Yes, that's it. All of a sudden, you run into some of that stuff, and before you know it, then you're out.
Still, people seem to go exploring there.
More fools you be. I wouldn't go into them caverns. Leastwise, not without a dog.
A dog? What for?
Well, if a dog keels over, then you know the gas is collecting.
I'm afraid, Mr. Gatty, your friend is dead.
Yeah, poor Patsy. It was from the gas, wasn't it, Doc?
That's what it looks like to me.
Why did you go in that cavern, anyway? Well, Patsy asked me to. He never seen a cave before.
How far did you go in?
Well, it didn't seem very far, but all of a sudden we lost our way.
Where was that?
Well, how do I know whereabouts it was if we was lost? We tried to trace our way back, but it wasn't no use. And Patsy started to get scared. It's kind of funny to see a big guy like that get scared.
Yes, he is rather big, isn't he?
Yeah, 6'4". The mob used to call us Mutton Jeff.
And then what happened?
Well, I was a little scared myself. But we stuck together, you know, walking in the dark with only my flash and the car. And all of a sudden, Patsy keeled over.
From the gas?
Yeah, that's what I figured. His head hit on a rock, and I guess that just about finished him off.
Yeah, I suppose you reckon yourself pretty lucky, mister.
Yeah, sure. I figure it was only because I'm 5'3" that I got out of there alive. And the gas must have been just about a foot over my head.
Yeah? And what do you think of that, Jock Melville?
I think you'd better arrest Mr. Gatty for the murder of his friend, Patsy. What was the flaw in Gatty's story? Do you know it? In a moment, we'll hear from Lem and Dr. Melville. But first... Now, let's see whether you're as observant as Lem and the doctor.
Hey, copper, let me put my hands down. They're tired.
When you're in Green's Gap Jail, not before.
I don't get it. It was a good story. I still can't figure how you found out.
Lem tells me they used to take dogs in the cavern because the gas is heavier than air. It collects on the floor. If you really met gas, you would have keeled over first before your pal Patsy.
Well, what do you know? I tell you, nowadays in this murder racket, you need a college education.
Another 5-minute mystery.
My father, is he all right?
We'll see, Mike. Where's the car?
Just kept going after he got hit. He's all right, isn't he?
I'm afraid not, Mike. Your father is dead.
But, Mr. Floyd, how can the insurance company be so heartless?
Now, don't get me wrong, Mr. Patterson. You'll get the money in time, just as soon as I've heard the story from you and Dr. Warren.
And time is not good enough. I don't even have money to bury him decently.
I'll be frank with you, Patterson. That's one of the reasons I've been asked to investigate this.
You don't mean to say that.
Don't get upset. Just tell me the story as it happened. You'll probably get the money tonight. Let's begin with you, Dr. Warren.
Well, there's nothing much I can tell you, Mr.
Please, Floyd. Doctor, whatever you can.
Mike's father was a man of about 65. His left leg was missing.
Well, that happened in a railroad crash. It was years ago.
He seems to have used a single crutch to help him, judging from the callus on his hand.
Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, practically all the time.
Where did the automobile hit him, Dr. Warren?
Mainly on the right side, from the look of things. That's where the worst damage was done.
All right. Mr. Patterson, suppose you tell me what you know about it.
Well, we were walking north, facing the traffic on the highway.
And the car that hit him was going south.
That's right. I particularly noticed the license plate as it approached. It was a Florida car, maybe heading home.
What make?
I don't know, but it was from Florida. I was helping my dad along as I always did when he walked on the highway. And this car came along at a terrific speed and swerved towards us. I tried to pull my father off the road, but he couldn't move fast enough. The car hit him with a sickening thud and jerked him away from me. That's all I can tell you.
Well, I've got the whole story now, I think, from my report. I want to thank you, both of you. This will facilitate action.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I suppose that means that I can get the money soon.
Not exactly. That means that you'll go to the electric chair for the murder of your father.
Why did Mr. Floyd charge Mike Patterson with murder? See if you can find the two flaws in his story. In a moment, you'll hear Mr. Floyd explain. But first... Let's see if your observation is as keen as Mr. Floyd's.
Let me go. Let me go, I tell you. You can't prove a thing.
Mr. Floyd, why did you accuse Mike of murdering his father? Was it simply because he's beneficiary?
No, Doctor. There are two things wrong with his story. First, he said his father was hit by a car with Florida license plates in front. Florida hasn't had front license plates in years. But more important, Mike said he was helping his father. Now, if a man's left leg is off, he uses a crutch on that side and is helped on the right side. And if they were facing traffic, Mike would have been on the inside and would have been hit by the car. We suspected what happened when we saw blood on Mike's own car, but now we know.
Find out in just a minute. But first...
our five-minute mystery. Me? Under arrest? Well, how do you figure that out, Inspector?
Look, Daly, that phone call I just made cinched it. I took a look at your coat. Not a ring on it where it had started to dry. And salt water always leaves a ring. And then when that dog there started drinking the water that had dripped off your coat, I was sure my idea was right.
But what are you talking about, Inspector? The sounds of salt at the ocean?
That's just it, Winthrop. That water on Daly's coat is as fresh as the water from your tap. Dogs don't drink salt water like that. I sent a man out to Daly's house before I come up here. I had him look at the bathtub just now. And Daly even forgot to run the water out of it when he dunked himself. Seems to me you picked a mighty uncomfortable way to get yourself in jail, Daly. It's getting cold out these nights to be running around town in a wetsuit.
Is going on at the Brown household around the corner. One of the guests, George Taylor, pauses while eating his dessert to say,
best lemon chiffon pie I've ever tasted, Mary.
Really?
I wish my wife could do as well.
Oh, thank you.
Say, it doesn't look as if Sam is appreciating it much, though.
Goodness, is my cooking that fast? Sam, your head's practically in your plate. I guess it's fallen asleep everyone. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Sam, sit up. Oh, it's dreadful. I'd better shake him. Sam!
Great God, he's dead.
How do you do? I'm Sergeant Barker, the Homicide Division.
Oh.
He's one of my boys, Mike Grady. Where's the body?
In the dining room at the table. We didn't move him.
Mm-hmm. I might as well be comfortable, everybody. This'll take just a little while.
Dead, all right. Peaceful, too.
Who's Mrs. Sam Brown?
I am.
And do you mind telling me what happened?
I guess not. I'm so shocked, I don't know where to begin or what to tell you.
Well, you might as well begin by telling me what you served for dinner.
Well, we had soup first.
Soup? What kind?
Mushroom, then roast chicken, green peas, mashed potatoes, dessert, and coffee. But I don't see how this could mean anything.
Yeah, just routine, Mrs. Brown. Did Mr. Brown eat everything?
Yes, he did. He seemed to fall asleep over his coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried to wake him, I found he'd had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm. That'll be all for a few minutes, Mrs. Brown. We want to take a look around. Notice anything about this table, Mike?
No, Chief, I can't say as I do.
Yeah, neither do I. Let's look in this kitchen here. Orderly person, isn't she? Stacked the dishes after each course.
Yes, and here's the silverware over here. Look, Chief. One of these soup spoons has turned black.
Right? Let me see it. Yeah, the only spoon that's tarnished, too. Well, I was beginning to think it was a heart attack or a perfect murder, but this silver soup spoon is evidence enough. Mrs. Brown?
Yes, Sergeant Parker?
I'm sorry to interrupt your little party, Mrs. Brown, but I'm sure your guests won't mind.
I don't understand.
You will, Mrs. Brown, you will. You see, you're under arrest for the murder of your husband.
Do you know why Sergeant Barker accused Mrs. Brown of murder? In a moment, we'll hear the solution. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Sergeant Barker, how do you know it was homicide?
Well, Mrs. Brown took careful pains to wash the soup pans and soup dishes before she served the rest of the meal.
Yes, I can see that.
But she forgot one thing, to wash the silver soup spoons. What she didn't realize was that an hour later, by the end of dinner, the spoon her husband had used to eat his toadstool soup would give her away. She didn't know that toadstools make silver turn black. Mrs. Brown almost committed the perfect murder. But she forgot to wash one spoon.
Another 5-minute mystery.
I've got some mighty unpleasant news for you, Mr. Barron. Carter Hove, the high school principal, has been murdered.
What?
I'll have to ask you to come down to the office for a few minutes. I'd like to ask you some questions.
Of course, Constable. I'll be right over. Constable, this is all a tremendous shock to me. Not only was Carter Hove my colleague at the school, but one of my best friends as well.
I know, Mr. Barron. It's been a shock to us all.
How did it happen?
Well, as far as I know, someone crept in through the window of Hogue's house and struck him over the head as he sat in his study.
Any clues?
Not a one. What I wanted to ask you was if you have any idea as to who could have had a motive for killing him.
The only thing I can think of is the threat made by Darryl Lewis's father when he found out that Carter had hit his son.
Oh, you heard about that. Bad business hitting that boy.
I was there when it happened. The boy provoked the incident by his surly behavior, but it was unfortunate that Carter lost his temper.
Well, that's the only clue I have, so I called Mr. Lewis on the phone right after you. You ought to be here any minute.
This all seems like a horrible dream, Constable. You can count on me to help in any way I can.
Thank you, Mr. Barron. I will. Come in.
Good evening, Constable. I'm Darryl Lewis's father.
Well, come in, please. Any idea why I sent for you?
A little. You must have heard about the threat I made to the principal when I found out he hit my kid.
That was a dangerous thing to say.
I lost my head. Hogue had no right to lay a hand on my kid.
Mr. Lewis, Carter Hogue is dead. Murdered.
Dead? Now, see here. I know what you're thinking, but and you're dead wrong. I'm innocent.
You're protesting your innocence rather loudly, Mr. Lewis.
Now, look here, Mr. Barron. I'm not the polished gentleman you are, but I can still protect the rights.
Doesn't look good for you, my friend. When you threaten to kill a man and then 2 days later he's murdered, it's more than coincidence.
You better close your mouth, teacher, or I'll do it for you.
Perhaps I'd better. I don't want to have you sneaking up on me and smashing in my skull with a bookend like you did to poor Carter Hogue.
Why, you dirty...
Easy there, Mr. Lewis, easy. You stop this cross-examining, Baron. There'll be plenty of time for it in the courtroom at your trial.
What?
You killed Carter Hogue, and I can prove it.
How does Constable Ed Chevers know that Sam Baron is the murderer of Carter Hogue? In just a moment, we'll know, but first... Back to our story.
Unfortunately for you, Mr. Baron, in your attempt to pin the murder on Mr. Lewis here, you became too dramatic in describing the scene and the action. How did you know that Hogue had been struck with a bookend? I didn't tell you, and you hadn't seen the body. Only the man who committed the murder could have known what the weapon was. You protested Mr. Lewis's guilt too loudly, Mr. Baron. You only proved him innocent.
Another 5-minute mystery.
I'm going to splash around a little. When you've always lived in Nevada, you don't have much chance to learn to really swim.
Is your brother around?
He's supposed to be. He and his friend Richard came down to the beach a couple hours ago.
That must be him coming along this way now. It's hard to tell, Miss Fogg.
Yes, that's Mike. Hiya, Mike. How's the water?
Jane, thank heavens.
What is it? What's the matter with you?
Something awful. Something awful has happened.
Richard. Where's Richard?
That's it. There's been some kind of an accident.
Accident? What is it, man? Speak up.
I left Richard in the water while I went down the beach away to get something to eat. When I got back, Richard had drowned. You're sure, Lieutenant Andrews, there couldn't be any mistake?
No mistake, Mike. He can't be revived. I'm sorry. When did you find him?
Just now. He's been in the water nearly 2 hours.
I wonder why no one found him before.
It must have been because of the fog. When I saw him, I waded out and called, but he didn't answer. There was a funny current almost pulled my legs out from under me.
Undertow. Even good swimmers drown when they get caught in an undertow.
Is that what it was? Well, anyway, I waded out as far as I could and finally grabbed onto him. I'd just gotten him back to the beach when you and Jean came along.
But we got here too late to help.
I could have reached him quicker if I could swim.
That's why I can't understand you're not being more careful.
I guess we just didn't know enough to realize the danger.
How did you manage to find him in all this fog?
When I got to the edge of the water, I saw something floating a little ways out. Then the fog lifted a second, and I saw that it was Richard.
How did you recognize him?
He was floating on his back. I saw his face.
That's pretty tough, finding him all by yourself. It's bad enough when it's a stranger, but your own friend.
Yeah. We went all through college together. Belonged to the same fraternity. We're even thinking of starting a little business together when we got back home.
You got along fine then, eh?
Sure. We had our differences, of course, but nothing important.
I think they must have been very important. At least, most people will consider them so.
What do you mean by that remark?
Your little story, if you'll pardon the pun, just doesn't hold water, Mike. I'm arresting you for murder.
What mistake in Mike's story has led to his arrest for murder? Do you know the clue? In a moment we'll hear, but first...
Thank you.
back to our story.
You're crazy accusing me of murder. You said yourself that the undertow could drown even a good swimmer, and Richard was hardly that.
Both you and your sister have mentioned the fact that you are from the West, that none of you know anything about swimming or the water. It is rather apparent to someone who does. It's a well-known medical fact, Mike, that when a man drowns, he sinks, and the body stays at the bottom for many hours, at least a day, usually longer. And you told me that you recognized your friend because he was floating in plain sight.
Well, you see...
Your story sounded pretty good on the surface. But like a lot of things, you have to look a little deeper for the truth.
You have just heard a Mystery Nine play from the old-time radio series, 5-Minute Mysteries, here on Audio Theater. Tonight's show's titles were Wife Poisons Husband at Party, Daughter Murders Father, Diamond Smuggling, Man Dies in Cave, Man's Father Hit by Car, Mr. Daly's Fake Robbery, Mrs. Brown Poisons Husband, Principal Bludgeoned, and Richard Drowned. These shows' original air dates were not known. Tune in again, next Monday evening, same time, same place, for another set of thrilling and awesome mysteries. Here on Audio Theater. This is your hostess, Allison, saying thanks for listening. Till then, have a great one.
This concludes Audio Theater, brought to you by the Jerry Cornish Radio Network. Stay tuned next time for another thrilling episode. Until then, I bid you farewell.